just like us to podcasting. We're back after a week break that was unplanned unforeseen.
It was kind of planned. It kind of seemed.
Well, not by me.
Fair.
Yeah, we didn't plan. We really didn't. Myself, Meg, and Connor went on a little vacation. Went out to paradisical Attica, Indiana, home of the Badlands.
Beautiful this time of year.
Actually, really was. Connor came home. Me and Meg stayed a few more days for my sister's wedding. But yes, we are back to do the podcasting. We are back to do the show.
I broke my toe.
That's right. And still worked on it, too. Like, you had a match.
Worked and worked on it.
Ah, that's what I meant.
I had a couple days of work where it was absolute agony because my job is walking on concrete.
Yeah.
Like, it's just awful. Went home early one day and took a half point. Was able to tough it out for a shorter day the next day. And then the last day of work that week, I knew it was going to be a short day because that's how all the Thursdays are.
Mm-hmm.
But like an hour in, I was like, I am where I was at 1:30 yesterday. I can't.
Yeah.
So I used 2 hours of sick time so that I technically only left at 12 because I stuck it out till 10.
Mm-hmm.
Used 2 hours of sick time, so I left at 12, which is only another half point. So I'm at a full point for that week. But after that, I was like, I might need to get this foot checked out. And then I wrestled on it, and I was like, I'm going to get this foot checked out. and I'm glad I did, because now I'm off until, I said Tuesday earlier, but I actually don't go back till Wednesday.
Nice.
Hell yeah, baby. Vacation.
And I could have gotten off more. Didn't think about it. I was like, I can't really afford that. And then my HR person was like, here's a thing for you to sign up to possibly get paid while you're off. Like, well, damn, I would have gone for the fucking 2 weeks if I had known that was
hell
a
yeah.
thing. But
we actually didn't have any broken bones or injuries on this excursion. We had one frightening moment and my four-wheeler popped a headlight out. But outside of that, no injuries.
Yeah, I was teaserly okay.
Meg rolled her quad into the mud, and it was frightening for just a few seconds, and then it was just absolutely filthy, as in the experience as a whole. She is not injured, not hurt, one fucking bit. Lost a pair of jeans, lost a pair of boots to this endeavor, but like, yeah.
It was wild, like, looking back to see her try and clear it. And watch her just tip over the side.
So, yeah.
I just fucking slammed it into neutral and, like, took off running. And I just...
I was parked. I was stationary watching this to make sure this, like, little bit of treacherous terrain was traversed. Hey, I see that thing roll over and just run as fast as I can, jump into this pit, only to then kind of realize that Meg's already out.
Yeah, you kind of went waist deep in it for...
Yeah.
Fuck all. Shits and gigs, basically. But I mean, someone had to get in there and fucking push that fucker out, dude. Like, that fucking thing's so fucking heavy.
Yeah, it is. There's some point where, like...
Tim Robinson.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
There's some point when, like we realize, okay, Meg's fine. She's okay. She's not hurt or anything. She's just dirty, you know, a little frightened and whatnot. Me and Connor are trying to get her four-wheeler out of this fucking La Brea tar
pit. Dude, and it's sideways. I can't stress you enough. It's a wall... at, like, an 85-degree angle into this pit that is filled with mud. And this fucking thing is, like, up it.
Yeah.
Like, right side wheels are facing me as I'm standing above it trying to pull.
Well,
like,
they're also in the air, so then whenever we would try to, like, gas it, there's one wheel that's not touching anything, just spinning, clawing for... So I'm like, God, dude.
Awful.
It was...
It sucked getting
I'm
it out.
I'm so glad that Tom is so strong because, like, I genuinely was like, I'm not fucking... I can't help.
It is also probably the strongest I've ever felt in my life, and it's the least thing to, like, describe. Because it's not like, oh, you picked up X number of pounds. It was, Bro, I'm in, like, quicksand up to my fucking dickhead.
It was basically quicksand, dude.
Like, I was so close to losing both of my shoes in it, and at one point thought I was actually going to get stuck and have to be, like, me get pulled out. But, like, at one point, Connor's on, like, the wall of dirt that's solid, gunning the throttle because it's on his side where he's standing. I'm basically doing, like, a two-hand press into one corner of this quad.
Tom is pressing up over his head, and I am, like, hanging over this thing, gunning it, trying to move it backwards.
There was a point where I was pressing up on the four-wheeler so hard that it was driving my feet further into the ground. Like, the mud had given way to solid earth, and I could feel my shoes going into that because, like, I was pushing on this thing.
Like Hulk fucking lifting Thor's hammer in the helicarrier.
Actually. Like, fuck, man. That was intense. Hey, you know what else is intense? Ringing this bell. We should do that real quick.
My thirst is intense.
You know what's intense? Camping.
Yes.
Motherfucker.
That's a good one. Riding the sand dunes, though, so much fun.
Brayden, have you ever, like, been, like, riding on a four-wheeler?
Traditionally, no. I mean, but, like, I grew up going to my dad's every weekend. My dad lived out with my grandma at, like, this lake. She had this huge fucking property with a lake.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
We had four-wheelers there. And even though I told my mom I didn't, we rode them all the fucking time.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think he'd like the dunes.
I was going to say, you would love the dunes.
There was one time that I was riding with my cousin, as per usual, and we're a little older now, so I'm a little gutsier on the thing. So I'm gassing it on corners. And
slide.
Drifting.
Yeah.
And just one time, I just didn't gas it quite enough, and I had full grip of that grass. And the thing tipped and threw me, and then, like, slowly rolled into, like, the grouping of trees. I thought it was so funny once I knew I was fine.
Yeah.
But it was terrifying looking back.
You do that thing where you're kind of, like, patting your body over and looking to see if there's any blood or bone sticking out.
Did you roll to your feet?
No, it was, like, I, like, splashed and, like, rolled, like...
Like, barrel rolled?
Log rolled.
Oh,
log
shit.
Rolled. And then, like, got up and was like, I'm good.
One time I was riding a three-wheeled golf cart down a hill with two other people in the back. It was like one of these like 1950s vintage golf carts or whatever.
So like the wheel that's in the front is like the size of a small dinner plate.
Yeah, well actually I think it was like, it looked like paddles but was a steering wheel. And it was like...
So it's like a yoke?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it was like in the middle of the thing?
Yeah, that's how those old... Dude, that is like...
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because like... Those were probably invented slightly before the game of golf. Like,
yeah. It's the most Jetsons-looking fucking game I've ever seen. So I'm riding one of those down a steep-ass hill with two other people in the back. And I decide I'm going to try and drift this sumbitch at the bottom of this hill. And when I tell you, I turned it to try and drift, and immediately fucking rolled that thing. Thankfully, it's made of, like, fiberglass, so it's, the whole thing weighed, like, 300 pounds or something like that.
But, like,
God damn, dude. It chucked all of us.
That's so funny.
I was in a golf cart. It was a two-seater, but it had, like, one of those, like, a... It was like a plywood-made truck bed in the back.
Okay.
So there was someone who was in the back. I was in the seat, and I think my brother was in the seat. Maybe someone else. I'm not sure. And then our friend, we were in Wisconsin on vacation at this point. Our friend who was the kid of the owner of the resort, so we saw him every year.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one driving, and so we come to this gravel patch. And it was vaguely downhill, but it, I don't remember it being super steep. And, of course, he drifts it. I'm fine. Dakota or whoever else is fine. Driver's fine. But the guy in the back was not fine because obviously there's no handles.
He's just riding on a flat piece of wood.
Yeah, thrown onto gravel. It was amazing.
God damn it. I had grandparents that had this racket for a while where my grandpa was working at an auto body shop. And he worked out this arrangement where if it was after business hours and he bought the paint, they would let him use the equipment there if he wanted to paint something. So they would buy golf carts, like old used golf carts from whoever, wherever, and actually paint them to look like miniature, like stock cars, like NASCAR cars. Mm-hmm. Basically buy a $1,000 golf cart, spend $80 on paint and stickers, and then sell it for like $3,000. And they were just like, they would like literally, they, for a while it was like a small business. They would like take orders from people. Like, I want one that looks like Jeff Gordon or something. Like, what do they cost? And shit like that. So every time that we would go visit, they would just have golf cart, at least one, if not four, that we could like just drive around on. And my brother Keith one time, this was such a, like,
did the Dale Jr. golf cart?
I'm sure they did. This one that I remember, I want to say it was like...
I knew there were at least three Dale Seniors.
There's... Oh, man, I bet those were just coming off the fucking factory line. Like,
they had
Mama T's,
a fucking
like,
stencil of the number three, never not dry.
It was me, my brother Keith, and my sister Cashton. And this was like such rapid-fire fits of violence between us. We used to give Keith shit when we were kids because we're kids and we're mean and we're siblings and we're mean to each other about him being fat. And he never really was fat. He was just kind of chunky.
Big bone.
Yeah, exactly. And we're in this cart. Cashton is sitting on the passenger side. Keith is in the middle. I'm driving. Cashton makes some shitty joke, or not even a shitty joke, just like, "You're fat," fucking remark to Keith. And he just goes, "Oh, yeah?" And just double hand checks her out of the golf cart. We're driving down a street, like, in town. Just checks her out of the golf cart. She goes flying into the asphalt, and I go, and my first instinct, not to stop, not to turn anything, I just haul off and punch Keith in the face. Then stop the cart. Like, she was fine. She just had, like, rode, like, scraped up, like, you know, knees and fucking arms and shit. And Keith is trying to... throws me under the bus for punching him. And I'm like, "You can't shove her out of the cart."
Wait, how old was he?
Let me think. I was probably... he was probably around 8.
Oh my god, this is way better than I thought it would.
He would have been 8. Cashman would have been like 11. I would have been like...
22.
Shut the fuck up. 22!
A full-grown man in his
30s. Just punching an 8-year-old child.
Yeah,
right in the fucking face, too.
No, actually, how old were you, though?
I would have been, like, 13, 14, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay. So, still.
I was going to say, like, I'm 6 years older than Keith.
Pretty fucking funny.
A teenager punching a fucking 8-year-old in the face.
Yeah. Now that I'm even, like, doing the math, even if I'm getting the actual ages wrong, it's still 6 years difference between us. So even if I was 12, he was 6. I just hauled off and socked him. But I think I've got the ages right.
Mm. Wow. Good stuff.
I didn't realize how insane that was until I told that story to people outside of my family. So that's good to know.
It's just... the immediate reaction to punch is
a running theme in stories about you and your brother.
I was going to say, this is one of at least three instances now I've told on the podcast that involved me punching Keith in the head.
Is it just Keith?
But not just that.
I've never had... huh?
It's not just that. It's instant.
Yeah. It's just a reflex.
Honestly.
He's lucky we got through that wedding this past weekend without him sucking another one.
Sucking. Anyway, what are we here to do?
A real five-knuckle sucker.
Any undercard, gentlemen?
Well, we were talking about it off-air, but Connor and I, at least, we capped off our vacation weekend with watching Forbidden Door.
So I went up to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, wrestled me that goddamn... Badger Briggs and Paul Reed. And technically kind of won the higher ground championship, sort of.
Yeah!
Pin on top of a pin, still a pin. Right?
If you're on the top, you should win.
I agree.
Because, like, you're higher up.
I'm always on top. I can only finish on top.
No, I kind of think that, as a former referee, I would call it that the person making contact with the pinned opponent.
Okay. Also, you know what would be a fun wrinkle to add into that? No matter what, the person who's in the middle of this pile has to have been the first person making the pin.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're there first.
Yeah.
And they're making contact. Anyways.
Anywho, then we came back and done watched Forbidden Door.
I like the show overall. Like, if I were to watch any of the matches just in a vacuum on their own accord, I would still really enjoy them on a rewatch.
Yeah.
But as is the case with literally every fucking AEW pay-per-view, they're too goddamn long. Like, I appreciate that if you're going to charge $50 for a pay-per-view, you better get...
You're getting your money 50, for it, man.
You are. But I'm also like, what if you charged $30 for a pay-per-view and gave me $30 worth of pro wrestling?
See, I feel like the model now for pay-per-view, or at least for AEWs, is like, it's not just the show, it's a day-long thing. It's
right.
A pregame, it's...
It's like, it's an NFL
it's
Sunday,
yeah
NFL but once
thing.
A month instead of
yeah.
every Sunday for, what is it, 8 months a year?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I feel like that's kind of what the model is. Like, you're not supposed to be, because... I don't think they believe in the faith of, like, a hardcore wrestling fan just sitting down to watch the wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, then that's what just the pay-per-view part is.
Right.
But, like, if you're buying the whole pay-per-view and you're watching the whole thing,
right?
Like, it's an all-day thing, you know?
It is fun
to
like,
casual, you know?
View it that way, too, and just be like, okay, we got a shit ton of snacks. We got, you know, a fridge full of beers or whatever.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, that's a good way
I'm
to
hanging
look at
out.
It.
We're talking about the show
as
the pregame is happening. Oh, shit. Hey, here's a match. Everyone
right.
shut up real quick. There's a match. Okay. Oh, we're going back to whatever. We're going back to snacks and
right.
talking about, you know, like, I feel like that's kind of what it's more meant to be.
And I mean, people are buying them.
Yeah.
Like, their buy rates are really high. So,
I mean, like it. I miss. Oh my god, 2 minutes ago the match just ended and the bell for the next match is already sounding. And this pay-per-view is awesome and it's the mid-2000s and there's butt rock as the theme.
I'll tell you what would help the viewing experience for an AEW pay-per-view, honestly. It's not even... I want some of the matches to be shorter. Not...
Yes.
I get it, like, there. If it's a pay-per-view main card thing, there's... You're obviously a part of a story or a star or something, right?
Right.
So you want to give them time, get your money's worth out of their pay, whatever. But there's times where I'm like, dog, 6-minute sprint every
yes.
so often just to like break
yes.
it up. Sign me the fuck up. You
that
know?
Should be as big of a staple on a pay-per-view card as like the, we don't really have anything for these two guys, but here's a fucking match.
Right.
You know?
Like... It just helps, like, and honestly, I feel that way about wrestling in general, because I remember a couple weeks, months ago, whenever we were talking about that last, there was a Fed pay-per-view, I think, where they'd thrown on Dominic Mysterio versus somebody from fucking AAA, and now I can't remember who it was. And people were pissed that it went, like, 5 minutes, and I was like, no! That was what I wanted that to be! Just 5 minutes of them having
yeah.
a good Lucha Libre style, or, like, American Lucha Libre style match.
Yeah.
I don't want... 14 fucking minutes. Like, it was great.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like people are so afraid to do, like, short matches on pay-per-view because, at least from, like, a WWE perspective, if they do a 4-minute match on a pay-per-view of theirs with 5 matches on the card, you know.
Oh, God.
Right.
Yeah.
You're running a real big risk there, pissing off a lot of people. But, like,
right.
AEW is in such a perfect position where, like, they could have just, hey man, you two are real good fucking wrestlers. 6 to 8, fucking
right.
get after it. Get yourselves over.
Dude,
like, you know, just...
I feel like so much of the same pacing or the same amount of time gets exhausting quicker than if
yeah.
you
yeah.
just break it up. The show
yeah.
is the same length or the same amount of matches that AEW has with different lengths
right.
might make you feel makes, less like it's too fucking long.
Right.
It makes no, I agree. Show I agree feel wholeheartedly. More alive too.
Yeah.
When you have 15 to 20
what
break, 15 to 20 break, 15 to 20 break, it feels like you're just getting programmed on when to like tune in versus tune out, and then right. It just feels monotonous because it's the same thing.
I do think that what did help Forbidden Door, especially in this instance though, was that there were several matches that were genuinely different styles of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking just off air, I think, about Nigel versus Zack Sabre Jr. Whatever, Matt, whatever you think it is, guys, that's exactly what it was. Just the best possible version of what that is.
Yeah.
Nothing else was like that on the card. Like, by design. Nobody's doing that style. Nobody's wrestling another guy doing that style. Like, I appreciate that. But yeah, sometimes I just want, like, just give me the ops crushing people for 5 fucking minutes,
yeah.
And then they're just gone.
Sometimes people on the roster can challenge for things,
mm-hmm.
and you can build a feud, and sometimes the people in the feud are still just poorly outmatched,
right.
And sometimes people just get crushed, you know?
Like,
that's one of my things, like, I know it's weird to talk about, like, I think about this when I'm thinking about, like, my figure thing with Bayley. Sometimes people can just fucking lose.
Yes!
Sometimes I'm like, oh, but this guy's high on the card, so I don't know if he can... And then I have to, like, snap myself out of it and be like, no, he can just fucking lose.
Right.
Because this move is a fucking big deal.
Sure.
Or this guy is a big deal, too.
Right.
So we're making him by having this guy just lose.
There's so, like, you can tell such a better, more nuanced story by having just somebody lose, depending on how you do it and where you go from there, than you ever can with somebody losing through distraction, interference, fucking schmoz, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Like, I'm in a place for that, but I feel like I got
absolutely.
To a place where I was using it too much.
That's current WWE, honestly.
Yes.
There was one episode of Raw recently I saw Simon Miller review where every match, literally every match on a 3-hour episode of television had distraction, interference, confusion.
There's a lot going on in the backstage. Hey, let it play out.
Well, like, to your point about, like, you can sometimes just have someone lose, Okada and Omega built that whole series off of that. Like, the length of one of the matches was the story of the match. Like, that Omega was exhausted. Like, that's the whole go for the Rainmaker and he just collapses. Yeah. The story of that match was Okada made the match go long because he knew that was the only way he could get past Omega. He fears the one-winged angel, everyone does, so he dragged it out to make him gas himself out. And he lost. And it didn't fucking hurt him one goddamn bit. Like, there's so many different ways that you can just build to a cool match and then have someone lose, and they're fine. Having said that, I still think Athena should have gone over Toni Storm, and I still really like Toni Storm, but I was kind of like... Mm.
So, hey, there's still... It's a case-by-case basis. There's still some things where, like, that guy should have fucking won.
Right.
Or that loss will hurt them. Like, when you repackage...
She's asking...
Soft repackage Asuka, and she
right.
comes back with the face paint, and she's all crazy.
Crazy
and,
heel,
oh, my
dude.
God, that's... Like, let's go. She's got a title opportunity. And then she fucking loses.
Right. Then it... Instantly, now what?
Yeah.
I think that when she finally does lose the Ring of Honor Women's Championship...
Oh, Athena? Yeah, okay.
Then she will come and beat Toni Storm.
Okay.
Or whoever is champion.
Which
I
is
think
fair.
That was a, like... hey, motherfuckers, get ready for... Here is a thing that we're going to go back to.
Right.
Just remember that.
I did appreciate that it was a clean finish, like... That was the match itself. I really fucking enjoyed
it was
too.
So
I think Athena is awesome.
O-Face Hotshot was
yeah,
like beautiful.
Like Athena's good enough in ring that I'm like, man, if we did that whole like dream match scenario thing again, I'm kind of like Rhea Ripley and Athena right now would be awesome.
Yeah. It goes stupid, and I'd want to see Rhea Ripley give Billy Starks, like, some crazy apron riptide or something.
Into, like, a buckle.
Yeah.
Mm.
Top rope imploding buckle riptide.
Oh, my God. I was trying to think of, like, if there's anything else I got for an undercover.
The
main event was wild.
Dog, talk about, like, your most insane Survivor Series teams of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This main event.
Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, Darby Allin, Tanahashi. On his last...
Mr. President.
His last match in the UK ever. And then the other... It was Mox, Claudio, the Young Bucks, and Gabe Kidd. It was...
Really, I mean, really fell off at the end there for me, but alright.
Fucking wild.
It was nuts.
It was dope. It was just absolute insanity.
There's a bit with a fork... Brady, yeah, that
was also insane. I remember saying, "That's what
I'm pitching that to me as a good thing."
Huh?
I hope you're not pitching that to me as a good thing.
No, I'm saying, as in, you will hate it, or seen it, you hate it. But that was so viscerally fucking gross and awesome.
We were sitting in the basement, and I was like throwing my hands up, like, "Oh God!" And then I remember saying, "That's what I wanted when I gigged my ear."
I just don't want that from my pro wrestling,
right? No, that's a spot I can't really sell to anybody.
I am okay with hardcore plunder. That's not my issue. I don't want to be viscerally grossed out by wrestling. That's not why I'm fucking here. I want to hoot and holler. I want to ooh, ooh, ooh.
Brody King.
See, that makes me hoot and holler.
No, that makes you scream. That makes you go, ah! Or whatever the fuck,
yeah,
that however
too.
You do it.
I mean, ah!
How's that go?
Did you watch that Whitest Kids You Know thing yet? About how Weapons is a sequel?
No.
Okay, we're going to watch that when we're done recording.
Okay.
Also, on said show, unexpected tag team title win from actually my favorite ramshackle tag team in a long time.
Yeah.
Brody King and Bandido, otherwise known as Where Did You Come From? Where Did You Go? Where Did You Come From? Brody, no.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's real good stuff.
Yeah.
They're just like the coolest tag team you've ever fucking seen. It's like, you know the Twitter meme that's like, fucker looks badass, don't he?
Yeah.
Like, when they come out, they're in matching gear, they have a mashup of Bandido's song into Brody King's song that slaps ass.
I was trying to think of what made it work for me, and then I had the thought of, oh yeah, I know what it is. Bandido is a smaller wrestler who is freakishly strong. Brody King is an enormous wrestler who's freakishly agile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's put these freaks together and see what they do. And boy howdy, they cook. Dude, they fucking cook.
That 450.
Yeah, dude.
Monkey flip 450. Pretty cool.
One of the goddamnedest things ever. Dude, I popped for it when I first saw the clip, and I damn near took a fucking mile run when I saw that it was the finish.
Yeah. Like, that's their tag finish.
Awesome.
I'm just so conditioned that an AEW clip is going to end with, and he kicked out!
Right. No, I think they won. I think they won every one of their tournament matches to get the title shot with the Monkey Flip 450, and then they won the titles with the Monkey Flip 450.
Good.
They figured it out, dude. They figured out the recipe. They have the sauce, dude.
They figured out what a finisher is.
Dude, Brody King is one of those guys that is on, I think, he's been on an awesome run lately, but I think is just beginning, like, a truly fucking sweet run.
Like, I think that whenever the Brodito thing runs its course, if they don't push him hard on his own,
yeah,
like,
dude,
that's promotional malpractice at that point. Like, he's mad over.
He's so fucking emotional. He has his own shoe with Adidas.
Yeah.
Like,
he has motherfucker a champion.
Mike the Rock Davis from the WDOW.
Another reason to push this man.
DOW.
He knows you gotta give.
I watched the Detroiters episode with Kevin Nash. Yesterday.
It wasn't my shit.
I think that kind of makes it worse, Dad.
That one slow motion shot of them walking down the hallway, like, as a trio, and him, like, giving the wink or whatever to the old secretary bitch. So fucking funny.
And she's like dropping her pencil and bending over in front of him.
And then they're three face, like they're both disgusted, and then you look up at Nash and he's smiling.
Yeah. Yep.
Dude.
The weird lunch scene where they just don't talk about any business whatsoever ever.
I just think Kevin Nash is the coolest guy ever.
He is maybe the coolest wrestler of all time. You know what? He should manage Brody King.
I was about to say, how do we get Kevin Nash and Brody King as a pairing to make the coolest, obscenely large men duo?
I never had a problem with Bandito, but you gotta go down on your own.
Listen, we're like the coolest fucking guys you've ever seen.
Look at all your tattoos, man. That's art. That's art that these guys don't have. You're a star.
I love it.
It's that easy.
Do we want to get into
Anton or what? What's the deal with that?
Do we want to get into today's main event?
I think so. I have so few notes on this entire show.
Oh, I actually have several.
Hey, good.
I watched this today. It's fresh in my brain.
So guys, we're talking episode 3 of the Cruiserweight Classic.
The Cruiserweight. I am the one and only king of the Cruiserweights.
So, it's been a while since we watched some of this. And I actually think that, like, it made it feel more fresh to me again. Instead of, like, if we had just done the whole tournament, yeah. Like, week on week on week on week.
Yeah.
The vibe of this, I was kind of like, oh, yeah. I remember you.
Oh, that's right, Harb Sera.
sports-based professional wrestling under the WWE umbrella. It's nice to see this again.
I believe Daniel Bryan's full name in the WWE universe is Daniel S. Bryan.
Uh-huh.
And the S stands for son, comma.
Daniel son of Brian?
Daniel son, comma, Brian.
Daniel son, Brian.
Comma, Brian.
Yes, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
That took me a second.
The American Dragon. In air quotes.
I actually had a couple notes on his comment on Brian Danielson's commentary.
Iron Dragonson.
Brian Dragonson?
Dude, one of the things that I kept, like, breaking my brain over watching, I don't know why it popped out for me for this episode, a match would get announced or whatever, they'd say, coming up next this, and instantly I'd go, wow, that person would go on to, and some of these are, the wildest trajectories.
Dude.
For a small group of people for a tournament.
I could not stop thinking right away off the bat from, like, the opening video. Wow, I can't believe that TJP got signed from this because Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi both told the WWE to go get fucked.
It did make me remember the thing about Kota Ibushi, like, not knowing who Vince was and
yeah.
Just being like, huh, no. They're like, we kind of did this whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing was built around Kota Ibushi, and if he said no, Zack Sabre Jr.
So speaking of our opening
match. And their third choice.
In this field.
In this, yeah, like, Tyson Dukes.
It's serviceable. Oh, man, I got a lot to say about that.
Textbook, even.
Opening match here, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tyson Dukes. And there is still, I know that it was this tournament, and I remember this happening, right? It is still weird to see Zack Sabre Jr. in a WWE ring.
It doesn't feel right, I have to be honest.
Yeah, it's odd.
I was like, this is 10 years ago, and this still feels fucking weird.
I love if, even back then, knowing very little, if not nothing, about Zack Sabre Jr., I felt like him doing this tournament was just so that he could check WWE off the list of, like,
oh, things. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Ben, I've done that company, whatever.
Now what? What else you got?
Yeah. Like, how much does
it
pay?
Let me go where I am actually used.
Yeah.
That was one of my notes here. I was like, it's wild because, like, he is currently a world champion on his second run in... what would New Japan be at this point? Top three? Like, top five biggest company in the world.
Yeah.
Probably of all time at this point. But
a
you know
major
what I mean?
Company.
Like, and then Tyson Dukes, I think, is still working.
Yeah, I think so.
I've not ever heard of this name. I feel like, I know I watched the Cruiserweight Classic every single fucking episode live when it happened. Or whenever it was first available. Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't live, but... And I don't remember Tyson Dukes then or now, forever. Like I don't know.
I remember him being in Team Canada in early TNA, and he was called the Dancing Fool Tyson Dukes, and he did this weird little like strut dance thing, and then got his ass kicked, and
Tyson
that was it.
Ducks.
Yeah.
He does a lot of like YouTube videos and stuff about technique in pro wrestling,
which I mean is pretty evident, like.
Yeah,
I thought he was like one of those Canadian promoters that ran those like death loops where they go through like the worst parts of the world.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I'm not too familiar with him, I have to be honest.
This match, though, I was watching this and I was like, this match is for Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, like, how... I wonder how produced and agented this tournament was. Like, how hands-on were the guys backstage to be like... do this, not that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this felt like they were just having a match that they had put together and had been told, yo, we want Zach to look really good here.
This is the... This whole episode is so one-sided.
Yeah.
It feels like the actual finish is never in doubt.
It kind of feels like that for the entirety of the first round.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is...
Sean Beluda ain't beaten Kota Ibushi.
I'm sorry. He has a chance, though. He's just got to watch out for the punches, the kicks, the throws, the Phoenix splash.
At one point during this opening match, Brian, on commentary, I wrote down, he's trying to not make this or Tyson Dukes sound boring, and he's not getting it correct, because he kept talking about, like, so fundamentally sound. His basics are so perfect, not flashy. And I'm like, I know you're being complimentary, but you're really telling me this car has manual windows, no cruise control.
CD player.
No unnecessary bullshit. Like
CD player.
I like that Tyson Dukes has a tattoo on his left arm, so you know which arm to work.
Ah, tradition. Classic.
Dude, but Sabre is just fucking so sick.
Yeah.
Zack Sabre Jr. is a guy who I enjoy watching, but something about me doesn't like him. I don't hate him. I just don't have like a like for him. I'm indifferent. I love his work.
Mm-hmm.
The person.
Yeah.
The blonde hair is something.
Yeah.
I think you need to, like, watch more of his promos.
He is a good promo.
He's a very charismatic guy.
I think
he's a dickhead, and he's awesome.
He's great at being a fucking dickhead. He's such a good heel. My thing with Zack Sabre Jr., because I'm a huge fan of his stuff and whatnot, but, like, the matches I'm always most excited to see that he's in are the ones that are at either end of the spectrum. Like, okay, him versus Nigel, we talked about it earlier. I was like, fuck yeah, let's go.
You know what that's going to be.
Right. But then there's that other end of the spectrum where I want to be like, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Hartenbauer. What can that be?
This
I would watch that.
Brought up.
I would watch that so hard. Like, but you know what I mean? It's like, I either want to see him against another excellent technician or somebody that may or may not know how to do a wrist lock. Like...
Who
Mike's
will
not
tell him,
this
I
show.
Don't, I'm not a, I don't do chain wrestling. But anyways.
Yeah, so.
And then they didn't sign him, and they signed TJ Perkins.
They sure did. They sure fucking did.
They saw a dude who could do some nifty little holds, and were like, what if we made him a gamer?
You like Pac-Man now.
Dude, okay.
That's what you like.
There was a... There was two very dark periods in my 205 Live fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the very beginning, because TJP.
Right.
But once it became the King of the Cruiserweight era, ooh!
Yeah.
That was like prime time 205 Live. It was like
6 months.
And then, once Enzo fucking beat... It was like, okay, I might not watch it ever again, but then we got the juggernaut of 205 Live.
I have a note about that in a little bit.
I like the Zotrain.
He would. Dude, I remember Enzo winning the fucking Cruiserweight title and having the thought of like, wow, they just told Vince they were doing that show finally. And he was like, what is this? Put it on the one who can talk. Like,
dude, they did a segment on Raw. I was watching this live and I was so... It was one of those things where I was like pumping my fist as it happened, but afterwards I was like, wait a minute, you just said fuck you to me. this is the segment. It was on Raw, and it was about Enzo fucking being the Cruiserweight champion, and he low-blowed Neville to do it, who was the heel at the time, so it was kind of a double-turn, not a double-turn thing, because Neville's still a bad guy, he's a bastard, you know. And the segment was, somehow, some way, all the Cruiserweights come out, they all beat the fuck out of Neville. They hit all their fucking moves on him. There's the 054 to Enzo. There's a... They hit Neville. Sorry. They're hitting Enzo. With all of their moves. He's the champion. They're just fucking him up for no reason. They're like, hey, fuck you. You're not the Cruiserweight division. But he's like, I am. And then they're like, fuck you.
Okay.
He takes the 054. He takes the running knees. He takes the fucking... I think Red Arrow is the last one. I think Neville comes out and hits that. And then I was like, I was pumping my fist, like, yeah, fuck you, Enzo. And then afterwards, I was like, you just fucking tanked the goddamn Cruiserweight division right in front of my eyes.
Yeah.
You just flipped me off.
Dude, it's wild that you bring that up, because I have a vague memory of it, but not... I was.
There's a really wrong, fucking like... awesome shot when he takes the running knees. Awful name for a move.
Yeah,
I hate it so bad.
Well, because his name is...
Yeah, I get it.
Tony Nese.
Is Tiny running knees just spelled like his name, or is it K-N-E-E-S-E?
It's K-N-E-E-S-E.
Good. That at least makes it worth it to me. But he takes the running knees, and Enzo, like, his face turns right to the camera, looking past the camera, thousand-yard stare. And it's a really good shot.
That's cool.
But other than that, that segment was fucking worthless.
I think that whenever you brand guys as a division together, that to me is like, go fuck yourself, division. Like,
I think the division should be vaguely referenced.
Absolutely. As in, this is where I'm competing, these are the matches I'm having, whatever. But when you start doing shit like, the entire tag division is standing side by side to complain about something, the X division, they did this 50 fucking times with the X division. Like... And it never helped anybody.
Dude, people
would start... It's not about No Limits. Or wait, god damn it.
You're right.
I would have loved if you had just doubled down. It's not about No Limits. It's about No Limits. Here's the bit. It's not about No Limits. K-N-O-W. We don't know limits because there are no limits.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah! Yes!
If I saw that on the back of a fucking Ford F-250 windshield.
With a Punisher skull in the middle of it, yep.
No limits?
I don't know limits. Just no limits or something.
Goddamn right, dude. And there's and
it's,
then
it
a,
it's
like,
a, like a speed limit sign looking thing, so
right.
He's speeding.
And it says no fear at the bottom too.
And Loki's on the bottom doing the caveman SpongeBob pose, dude. Chris Sabin. Goldilocks. Are we still doing an X Division shirt? No.
He was doing
a full back window display.
Yeah. Stickers on a back window.
Yeah, is Sonny Siaki on that back window display?
No.
Is Sonny Siaki in this tournament?
Where the fuck is Sonny Siaki? This was good stuff, though. Zach wins via submission. Take a note of that.
I have a note that says Brit rests, because he does the fucking knee elbow God fucking damn it. Foot into the knee.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Headlock thing.
Oh, I wanted to do British shit.
Dude, that is so funny. Isn't that when someone drops Alex Shelley's foot?
Yeah,
it's Punk, I think.
Oh, that's so good. Anyway, the crowd is real still for a lot of this.
So Sabre's quote of doing British wrestling for American audiences is like reading Shakespeare to a dog. and that is really showing here. Because there's a pathetic C-dub-C chant during this. And otherwise it's just kind of golf claps for all this really cool...
That's what I'm saying with Zack Sabre Jr. I love watching his work. I just haven't connected to his character before.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out where on the taping schedule this episode must have been, because this crowd... It wasn't.
Well, that could have been.
It just felt like they were
dead,
tired.
Yeah.
I was like, was this after an NXT thing? What was the taping schedule for this tournament? Because I was like, I don't know. Like,
Danielson after this match says that he just willingly, openly says that if I am able to come back, there's some stuff I just saw that I'm gonna steal from Zack Sabre Jr. And I'm like, I love that so much. Oh my god!
Imagine going back to this point and being like, "Yo, you guys are gonna have a match on pay per view."
Yeah.
Not for this company.
Yeah.
You guys are going to have another match on another pay-per-view for a different company called New Japan. So Zach's sitting there like, so I'm not getting signed. Danielson is probably like, I get to come back to wrestling and or be fired? Like, not
please,
knowing he would
please
quit.
Fire
like,
me, please fire me, please. I almost called Brian Kendrick Spanky on commentary. Please fire me. I love when Danielson was trying to get fired.
He was actually really good on commentary.
I really liked his commentary.
He's just like a genuinely like funny and charming guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That like he's so good at just popping in random stuff.
I think especially like he's always been that way, but I think it's probably more so now because he's like, bro, I got a wife, kids, I got money. Like I can, you know what I mean? Like whatever tentativeness he may have had in the past has to be gone.
Yeah.
Corey Graves makes a little appearance from Tron.
Yeah, dude.
The control center!
The CWC control center is awesome.
I want to know what it looked like without everything chroma keyed in.
I'm not going to lie.
I hope it was just a blue.
I hope so too. Just
it might have been the marijuana hitting me at this point, but I wrote down, why does the control center have absolutely no controls? He is just standing there. He's not.
He's standing in a grab.
That's true. Everyone else, he's in the say center. He says what people are doing.
He is in the fucking cyberspace, dude. They shot Corey Graves into the internet, and now he lives there.
Corey Graves is Lawnmower Man now.
Yes, he jobbed it.
Also, not gonna lie, I said Tron, and it made me remember there's that new Tron movie coming out with the soundtrack by Nine Inch Nails, and I want to get real high and go see that in like IMAX or something.
Jared Leto, how do you feel about that?
There's things that I hate about Jared Leto. There's performances he's had that I really loved. There's performances he's had that I really hate.
You famously love the Joker.
That's not true.
Famously.
Famously, yeah. I've never said that.
The Joker. You don't have to. It's an implicit wheel.
That version especially, you know.
Yeah, the Joker, yeah, baby.
With that cool, the damage tattoo and the other... tattoo of his smile on his hand. Yeah, that was so, so cool, guys.
Fuck you, Joker!
Our next contest, Drew Gulak versus Harv Shira.
And this is where I said, I wonder who is gonna win.
Yeah.
This one year away from being side-by-side with the WWE Champion. Not even 1 year away.
Oh, this yeah, you're right, yeah.
Wow.
Because this was in June of 2016.
Yeah, because this was another one where I was like, wow, the trajectories these guys took. Because he would go on to do the Bollywood Boys thing. You're right, be with Jinder.
I bet he's the one who makes Orton make the face.
Yeah.
Probably.
He might be. I don't know. There's only two, it's 50-50
chance. Harv or Gerv?
Is it really Gerv?
Yeah.
What?
I love that you know that.
I think that they're both
they
like
call
shortened.
Him, dude, they call him like Shira.
Yeah.
Exclusively on commentary, so I never got his first name.
Yeah.
I actually had to look it up to see what it was spelled as because I couldn't understand what they were saying. It's Harv. H-A-R-V.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Harvey.
But not.
Harv.
Like Harvey, but not. I don't know why, but not might but be not. One of those guaranteed bits of comedy for me. But not.
Yeah. Gulak, on the other hand, would somehow inexplicably stay employed for a long time, have that ripper of a match on a pay-per-view with Danielson years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then ultimately get fired and canceled because of Ronda Rousey? Question mark?
Just, what a...
Yeah, where is he at right now?
Nowhere.
He's like...
Like,
gone. Yeah. He did kind of just get...
He did, like, one independent show and did a spot with, like, Kimberly or something trying to, like, drum up heat and work the angle or whatever around him getting fired.
Hmm.
And I remember seeing the clip and being like, I don't think this is a good idea. And it was not.
Nope. The crowds did not care for it.
That is the last time that I saw or heard anything out of Mr. Gulak.
Out of Mr. Soldier Ant.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I like this match. I thought it was okay. There wasn't much to, like, really take note of here.
It's weird, because, like, all this stuff that was considered, like, groundbreaking and innovative in 2016 has just become so normalized now.
Dude, thank you so much. Because that's a note that I have on this, like, later, where this doesn't feel like cruiserweight wrestling.
No.
This just feels like wrestling.
Yeah. I never even thought about that.
And I would actually argue without, like, I would not limit that to, like, one or two companies. Like, the matches that I'm seeing in this Cruiserweight tournament feel like matches that I could see on Raw, on Dynamite, on the Home Shopping Network, or whatever channel TNA is on. Like, others.
Others.
More are coming.
Another submission finish.
Tell you what, man. You and I disagree, and I don't care.
Mm.
I fucking love a dragon sleeper.
I saw that, and I was like, this is going to get brought up.
I fucking love it.
I enjoy a dragon sleeper. It's a good submission from behind that isn't the rear naked.
All right.
I love it. Python coil used by Tito Bellinger.
Python coil is a good name.
Mm. That's what I used to call my penis.
It coils?
Yeah, before the reduction.
Whoa!
Before the surgery?
Yeah, I had 3 feet of my penis taken out.
Because of the diverticulitis?
Yeah.
Or just your lifestyle?
Dr. Pepper took it out for me.
Who? Dude, we were watching videos today of guys beating the shit out of pedophiles, and there was some dude named Dr. Pepper, and it made me laugh so hard.
Why are you watching that?
I was at work.
That doesn't explain anything!
That in fact makes it worse.
I was told, hey Tom, have you ever seen videos of these guys who go around and find pedophiles and beat the shit out of them? And I was like, yeah, I think Coin used to send me some of these. Didn't some dude get like body checked into a grocery store shelf? And they're like, yeah, check this shit out. And we watched Dr. Pepper beat the fuck out of these guys that were trying to fucking diddle kids.
You know what you should watch instead is Street Beefs.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
You should watch instead if you want predators to get caught is you should watch my new show Takedown on True Blue. Takedown with Chris Hansen. Genuinely. Because these guys who beat the shit out of these predators, these predators never seek justice. They never see just that this is just for no one.
Exactly. Now, Chris Hansen, could you sing me your famous song, Bob?
Hansen didn't bop,
bop a top and bop. I have to do like voiceover Chris Hansen.
Bop, boop it up, bop, skip it up, bop.
Our next match: Tony Nese versus Anthony Bennett. I saw this Anthony Bennett guy, and this is what I wrote down. Finally, a gimmick. I hate it.
Tony Nese versus Tony Bennett. as I wrote down.
Oh my god.
Also, there was a WWE 2K17 commercial before that.
Yeah.
That was one of the good ones.
Anthony Bennett looks like a Simpsons character.
2K19 is the best of the last ones. The best of the last good ones.
Yes.
But really, I mean, let's go back to Smack Numbers around 2011 for me.
Yeesh.
Fucking bucket.
So, yeah, this match was nothing, man.
It was fine, I thought. It made me like Tony Nese, and then I had the weird thought of, I was like, oh yeah, Aria is in this tournament. Tony Nese is in this tournament. Those two are a tag team now.
I think Tony Khan really liked the Cruiserweight Classic.
I feel like a lot of people that came through this tournament at least had a bit in AEW.
Yeah.
Or Ring of Honor. Because I was like, it was weird to me that I was like, oh yeah, these two guys have been around each other for so long.
I have never been able to care about Tony Nese.
I wrote down, in regards to that, I actually wrote down CWC featuring several CAWs. Yeah. Tony Nese, to me, is like...
Yeah.
Just one of those... I'm sure he's a good guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think his shit in-ring is bad at all, but it's just kind of like... You got to be in a tag team, or a multi-man, or...
Yeah.
Like...
When they paired him with Buddy Murphy, and they did the whole storyline leading to their match where
they did
Tony Nese.
That's what I was going to ask. I was like,
beat fucking Buddy Murphy for the Cruiserweight belt. I was like,
he did?
That guy? Yeah, he's the one who ended the reign of the Juggernaut of 205 Live.
I did not know this.
I'm sensing some soreness.
It's Buddy Murphy, man.
Weird finish on this one, because...
Yeah, I thought it was a bizarre finish. Because it almost feels like the dude legit got knocked out by that power slam.
Yeah. But then was like, nah, man, I'm good. Because Nese still hits the 450.
Yeah.
So what the fuck was that? It was really fucking awkward. Because he even goes up, like, he hits the fucking power slam, scrambles up. Dude is not moving. Ref's checking on him. Kind of like says, whoa, hold on a minute.
Yeah,
hold on a minute. He goes down to the middle rope while they're checking him. And then I guess the ref is like, nah, man, he's all right. And he just gets back up on the top rope. Anthony Bennett, meanwhile, is well enough to signal that he's well enough, but not well enough to get out of the way or block the 450 splash. The whole thing was really fucking odd.
You know what would have been awesome is if they would have just called the match because he got knocked out from a body slam. Because Tony Nese body slammed him so hard.
That would have been cool as shit. I think Tony Nese, like, in-ring is fucking great. Like, yeah. All his shit is, like, crisp and clean.
His fucking vault over the top rope to the opposite middle rope fucking
lion salt
is insane.
Like, that's crazy impressive. But for some reason, yeah, you're right. It's just a thing where it's like, I can't care.
He did do this thing on his entrance every time where he had his jacket that showed his abs and he would count
them all. Oh, yeah,
I
remember that.
I love that.
He's best when he's doing just like a classic body guy heel gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's trying to be babyface in this tournament, which I don't think... it wasn't working for me. And also, he was babyface against Buddy Murphy.
So our next match, which I believe is the main event of this episode.
Yeah.
It is. Raul Mendoza versus Brian Kendrick.
Was no plan.
No.
It was not edited. It was not cut. It was the actual just...
Yeah. Was the thing, and then I don't like it.
I felt like he took a little bit of time trying to get to that part of the song. Like on his entrance or whatever. I felt like he was really waiting for that guy to yell, I'm a man with a plan.
Do you know that stock music?
Yeah. That's why you can't fucking get it on like Spotify or anything.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking owns it.
That's fucking nuts.
Yeah. Dude, I loved Brian Kendrick. And I hate that I can say that now and be like, oh, God damn it, you weird piece of shit.
Dude, if he could just not, you know, be so fucking weird, man.
Like, watching this match, I was like, why couldn't you just be more normal, just a little bit more normal, and still be signed, and be in a fucking pairing with Drew McIntyre? Look at him!
Look at him!
It's right there! He probably stands up to Drew's fucking ass crack in height, but like, God damn it, it'd be great.
Yeah.
Also, I just love Brian Kendrick's work. I thought he was excellent in this fucking match.
He's like, so, like, in-ring.
Smart.
He's so, yeah. Just
they said, they had a good call on commentary at the beginning where Brian Danielson was like, in the beginning, the earlier stage of his career, he was compared to Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh, now he looks more like Leo in The Revenant.
I literally wrote that down.
That was just, that was very good.
It was a good timely reference.
Yeah.
Danielson is resisting every urge to call him Spanky.
It's biting his own tongue physically. Yeah.
Spanky.
Also, goddamn it, I love The Revenant. That's a hell of a
Spanky.
It's also, it was wild to me to realize that Raul Mendoza is still there.
Wait, still at the Fed? In the Fed?
I'm pretty sure.
Is he in the Legado del Fantasma?
He's in one. I think he's in the. I think he teams with Joaquin Wilde.
In the LWO?
Yeah.
LWO.
LWO. I'm pretty sure he's still there.
Oh my god, he is, dude.
Am I right? He's in LWO. Yeah. He's been there for 10. He might be the most like tenured guy to come out of this fucking tournament outside of like.
Noam Dar's still there, brother.
Get the fuck out! No, he is not.
I'm pretty sure he was still on fucking.
No fucking god way. Like, Christ wouldn't allow that. Noam Dar cannot still be there.
Noam Dar? More like no fucking way.
Dar? Like.
Dar?
Dar? Fuck that. That can't. If that's true, I'm pissed again.
WWE 2016 to present is what it says on Wikipedia, though. NXT 2023 to present.
God damn it.
Yeah, dude.
That's crazy. Why? Why?
On June 22nd, NXT General Manager Ava announced that Dar had vacated the NXT Heritage Cup due to another injury. That's the last sentence in his career breakdown.
Oh my god.
I was
going to
say,
god.
Like he's been hurt for most of his time there.
Is he just like at the bottom of the filing cabinet so they keep sending checks?
He must be, man. He's getting that Disco Inferno pay.
Oh, Lord.
Dude, he's like, no, he's like, it's not, this isn't like a JTG. He's wrestling for them.
Yeah. On NXT.
It's not just their, yeah, but they're not just sending him checks. He's actually working.
That's fucking disgraceful. I hate Noam Dar.
Israeli scum.
God damn it. Brian Kendrick in this match, by the way, gave me big Bucky Collins vibes.
Yeah.
In only the best ways. Like, unbelievable facial expressions.
Conspiracy theories and all.
Yeah, yeah. His questionable takes on, quote, those people, end quote.
Whoa!
I heard Bucky.
And then, quote, those, you know.
Yeah.
Those people.
Bucky has said this numerous times, as has Brian Kendrick.
Yeah.
I actually thought Raul Mendoza was kind of awesome in this match, though.
Yeah. He worked bad, man.
Like, he seemed like I have to get this job. If I get this job, I'm going to keep it for at least a decade. But I have to get this job.
I really need this job, man.
If I get this job, it's fucking mine forever. If I get this job, I have a career.
If I get this job, you can have it when you pry it from my cold, dead hands.
That's amazing. I'm glad that you blew my mind on that today.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, I thought he was good in this match. Then my biggest note on this is that the bully choke, as it is called, mm-hmm. I thought it was the captain's hook. Maybe it doesn't have that name yet.
I don't, because he's not doing the pirate thing yet.
Right.
Paul Burchill should have come back. No.
Oh, man.
No, I think you're the only one.
bully choke is a move that I fucking love.
Yeah.
And I gave it to Bulk Riggs. Just got it. Just wanted to.
There's some really cool evasions in this match. There's a pretty dope dive, too, from you have to fucking hire me, Raul Mendoza.
I'm bleeding from the mouth. I'm going to do a corkscrew plancha, Mendoza.
Swinging condo clutch. Pretty fucking cool. Like,
they were fucking, like, doing some shit in this.
They actually got the crowd to fucking
move.
This was really fucking good. I liked it a lot. Fucking Raul Mendoza does the Roddy, the end of heartache.
Yeah.
Like, right before the finish of this. And I was like, oh, man, you are getting that job.
One, two, foot on the rope, not foot on the rope, foot on the rope.
Right. Now, I thought this was solid. This was a fun little watch.
Danielson being so, like, behind Spanky in this.
He even says at some point, like, because I think Mauro tries to say we're supposed to be unbiased. And Danielson flat out says, I never agreed to that. You can be unbiased.
That's awesome.
Fucking wild shit.
But, yeah, man.
I recommend this episode.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Like, there was some stuff in, like, the Drew Gulak match that I really liked, even though I think that's the match that I liked least on the card. Like, there was a point where he was getting pinned, and as he was kicking out, was trying to grab Harv's foot, and they just, like, fought out of it. It was just a tiny little detail. It was like, oh, okay, that was slick. Like,
there was the body scissors being that reversal where you hook their feet.
Mm-hmm.
That when Harv hooked his feet around Gulak's feet and like pulled, I was like, oh, that's nifty.
Yeah.
And then they kind of circled back to it right before the finish. I don't know, it was real good, but like the least of the three matches on this show.
Yeah. For sure.
It also made me realize that I think that if companies were going to do like the very, because this is very sport based, this is very like Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Esque. If you're going to do that to me as a television product, hour-long episode, probably the best route to go. Like, because this was just an easy watch. Everything was, you know, some degree of interesting. Like,
I just, obviously because of the style of wrestling, the nature of wrestling, you can't call it Cruiserweight Classic anymore, or you'd have to drastically drop the weight, and then you know what I mean?
Whatever. Right.
But why haven't they done something, some sort of tournament like this since?
Like a pure, like not pure rules, but like you're saying like a more wrestling centric single elimination tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People who are like, even if you did people that were in the company, you don't have to do like from people around the world that aren't signed or whatever. You can do it from in the company. Just give more tournaments, man.
Yeah.
Tournaments fucking kick ass. Like, to me, the best route to go with that would be to do it for the Intercontinental title, because it's kind of always had that vibe of, like, being the workhorse belt or whatever. Yeah. Like, do a fucking 16-man tournament over a month of TV. I also, like, I like the old King of the Ring format where you would have the semifinals and finals on the same show, or the even more rare where they would do like the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. So you're watching that story unfold in one show.
Yeah.
With all the, like, I love that as a format. I get the idea of like, okay, if you want to make it like sports based, you would do like, you know, a match a week or a round a week or whatever to like the NFL doesn't make people do the playoffs in consecutive days or you know what I mean? Like shit like that.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I don't know. Because you can't do you can't call it pure, because that's pure rules is now taken on a completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a Ring of Honor trademark, basically.
Yeah. I don't know.
You have to like open weight classic.
Why not?
Yeah.
All right, let's shut this.
That
bad
way
one.
you could have like a on two sides of the bracket like Omos and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
And they're your finalists or something like that.
Yeah. That thing where the moment you see the card, you're like, that guy? That guy.
Yes.
That could be fun.
That'd be cool. Open weight, open never weight, never weight.
Never open weight.
Never open weight.
Open the dragon gate.
Open the dragon weight. Gate.
Gate weight. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, we got more stuff to do. What are we doing?